Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
So I was just texting back and forth with someone, we'll just refer to that someone as someone offshore that I know pretty well, because I was wondering the difference in point spreads Monday night if Jaden were playing versus Marcus Mariota. He said the line was 5.5 before the games on Sunday. The way the Chiefs dominated the Raiders and then the way Washington was dominated by Dallas, even if Jaden finishes that game and they still lose, the line goes to 7, 7.5. And he said it's at 12.5, 13 right now. So the difference essentially between Mariota starting and Jaden Daniels starting from an odds maker standpoint is roughly 6 points. I think we did something on that before the season started, talking about backups versus starters and how a starter being out would impact the point spread. I think Josh Allen had the biggest delta with his backup, followed by Mahomes, and then I think Jaden was in the next tier. But basically, they'd be about a 7 to 7.5 point favorite if he were playing. With him not playing, they are 12.5 to 13 point. I'm sorry, underdog. They'd be a 7 to 7.5 point underdog if he were playing. They're 12.5 to 13 without him playing. Joining me right now to talk some NFL is JP Acosta. JP writes for CBSSports.com. You can follow JP on X on Twitter at Acosta32_. JP. He recently wrote about the Chiefs and the return of Rashee Rice to the lineup last week. First of all, I'll ask you what I asked my last guest, JP. Have you ever seen, as an NFL fan, a more lopsided box score than the Raiders-Chiefs game on Sunday?
I honestly don't think I have. I know the score might only look like only 31-0, but everything right. about that game was over from the minute it started. I mean, the fact that the Chiefs had 30 first downs compared to the Raiders running 30 total plays. I was watching the tape of the game on the All-22, and it took me maybe like 10 minutes to get through the Raiders' offense. So that's unprecedented, and it's an unprecedented levels of lopsided dive scene.
Yeah, I've never seen 30-3 first downs, 77-30 plays. I think it's the third fewest plays, my last guest told me, in the Super Bowl era to be run by a team. And the Chiefs basically, as you know, just stopped playing in the fourth quarter. I mean, they didn't want to get anybody hurt. They just, you know, handed the ball off. It could have been 41 or 45 points and 40 first downs to like 4 or something like that. It was insane for sure. So, what has the return of, actually, beyond just Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy meant to the Chiefs?
So, I think for both guys, with Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice, they help create layers for the offense in Kansas City. What Rashee Rice does for Kansas City is he gives them someone who can win in the slot against man coverage, against press coverage, and he gives them, basically on all their RPOs, he is their RPO guy after the catch. He turns those catches at the line of scrimmage, those screen passes into 6-yard gains. It helps keep their offense on schedule. Xavier Worthy is the guy who separates downfield. He's the guy that you design the explosive plays for. He's the guy that you design plays to get him running away from safeties and corners. But Rashee Rice is important because on plays where they need a bucket, when they need, it's man coverage, they're playing press, they go to Rashee Rice. So I think they're going to have an ability to extend. They're going to have the ability to play matchup ball now with Rashee Rice back in the lineup because they have so many different guys who win in different ways.
I mean, I'm just thinking about Rice on Monday night in the slot. Mikey Sanders still has really struggled this year to cover, and he's been moved into the slot, which is where they drafted him to play, but he played primarily on the outside last year out of need played better. That could be an absolute nightmare. Do you think of the Chiefs today, like many are starting to think about them, and that is as the front runner, even at 4-3, to be the representative from the AFC in the Super Bowl?
It's hard to choose anybody else right now simply because of how dominant that Chiefs offense has been now that everybody's back. I was a little worried about their defense even while they were going through some of their offensive woes, but if the offense is going to put up 38 points a game, then it's going to be hard to keep up with them anyways. I think their secondary and their linebacker core has played really well since week 4. Nick Bolton's been truly playing inspired football. I still don't think they have enough pass rush, but with Spags and with Chris Jones, all you need is one moment from each of those guys, and they'll be able to get the ball back to the offense. So I think they're still the AFC favorites, even with 3 losses. Because now they're getting everybody back, everybody's healthy, and it looks like the Chiefs' offense of old.
You know, you mentioned, obviously, in Spagnuolo and Chris Jones, you've got, 2 guys that have, been there, done that. I'm such a huge Karlaftis fan, and I'm looking at it right now. He's got 3.5 sacks through 7 games, and you said about their pass rush not super impressive. Why hasn't their pass rush been impressive this year?
So I think the thing about the Chiefs' pass rush is they have one quick winner in Chris Jones.
Yeah.
The other guys on that pass in that pass rush unit work to funnel the quarterback to Chris Jones. They are all pocket pushers. You think about Charles Omenihu. You think about George Karlaftis. Those guys don't win with speed.
Right.
They win with strength and trying to run through.
Karlaftis is like Ryan Kerrigan number 2. Like every time I watch him, yeah, I think I'm watching Ryan Kerrigan.
Yes, he's going to win with speed, he's going to win with power, he's going to win with violence. He's going to try and convert that length to power. They don't have a guy who can get around the corner. They don't have a guy who can win with bend. So I think they just need another – it's like having a pitching staff with all knuckleballers right now with the Chiefs defensive line outside of Chris Jones. They need somebody who can throw 98. They need somebody who can go tip the who can tip the scales as a pass rusher with juice. So I think if they get another guy with speed, that was supposed to be Omar Norman Lott from defensive tackle spot, but he tore his ACL. So you need somebody with speed. You need somebody with juice to help as a complement to all the other power guys they have on the roster.
We're going to talk about the rest of the league. My intention was not to just focus on the Chiefs, but you wrote about them. You obviously know a lot about the Chiefs, and that is our team's next opponent on Monday night. Do you know much about this Josh Simmons story? For those that don't know what I'm talking about, remember Josh Simmons, the lineman from Ohio State, the Skins had a chance to draft him. They drafted Connerly Jr. instead. Josh Simmons plugged into the starting lineup and played well early in the season and now essentially has gone AWOL. What's the story with Josh Simmons?
I wish I knew. I wish I had intel for you. Like most of everybody else, I don't know what's going on. And all we truly do is hope for the best with Josh Simmons, who, like you said, was playing incredible football before he left. So all we can really do is hope that he's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Hope that he's doing all right, he and his family. So that's really all that I can say about what's happening with Josh Simmons.
Yeah, it's a mystery. He's missed the last 3 games now. And he apparently there was a family issue, but he's not back. It really, to your point, hopefully everything, you know, works out. You know, thinking about their offensive line, by the way, Juwan Taylor, you know, basically has led the league in false starts for like three straight years. We all get to watch the Chiefs so much, and 74 is called, it seems like, multiple times per game of either, you know, lining up, you know, in the backfield essentially is their tackle, or false starting. Hopefully we get a couple of those. Has he been better at that this year? Do you know?
I think it's still been an issue for him with the false starts. That's always going to be an issue with the illegal motion, with the way that he lines up in his stance. Where he's comfortable is basically getting as far, legally, as far back as possible to give himself as much space as possible before guys try and beat him with speed. So he's still having issues with false starts, having issues with flags, but where they kind of mitigate that pressure and mitigate those issues is like getting the ball out so quickly. And if Patrick Mahomes is a built-in run game at this point in his career where he's just taken off scrambling, so they do a good job of mitigating the issues that Juwan Taylor's had.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't talk. I think Laremy Tunsil last year led the league in false starts, but I just pulled up the numbers. Juwan Taylor, currently the second most penalized player in the league. He's got seven total. Two of them are false starts, but two of them are illegal formations. Four of them are holding. We are talking to CBSSports.com's JP Acosta. What do you make of our team from afar?
So the Commanders, I have questions about some of the sustainability for the Commanders, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And the biggest issue with last year compared to this year is they made the bet that the veterans on defense would help lift everybody else on that side of the ball, and their veterans just haven't been good this year. Marshon Lattimore has not been good in coverage. He has been picked on a lot by every team in coverage. He just looks like he doesn't have the speed anymore. And Bobby Wagner gets picked on in passing coverage as well, which is an issue because of how much teams like to isolate their best players against linebackers and safeties. I do think that Daron Payne, Javon Kinlaw have each had nice moments, but it becomes null and void when your secondary and your pass coverage has as many holes as the Commanders' defense does. And because there are so many holes everywhere, you can't put them all out.
No, they are in big trouble defensively. They've also lost their, you know, perhaps best player this year defensively in Dorrance Armstrong. He tore his ACL in Dallas. They've lost their top three defensive ends. We're wondering, you know, who's going to line up at defensive end on Monday night. That is certainly an issue. All right, let's look at kind of – actually, let me ask you about Drake May and the Patriots, because you last wrote about them. I think everybody watches Drake May and says, wow, what a season he is having. He's actually probably putting his name into the mix for potential MVP. I don't think he's going to win the MVP, but he could be in the mix. They've also played, apparently, the weakest schedule in the history of the NFL through seven games. And if it holds up, we'll play the softest schedule in NFL history. So what's real and what isn't with the Patriots and Drake May?
I think what's real with Drake May and the Patriots is how good he is throwing the ball downfield. He's basically throwing 40-yard handoffs at this point. He is one of a couple of quarterbacks in the NFL this year with a completion percentage on 20-plus yards of over 70%, which is unheard of at this point in the season. And Drake May, where he also wins with the Patriots, is he has the ability to scramble and has the ability to make off-schedule plays, which is super helpful because the Patriots' offensive line still has not been great, which is why I sort of wonder what's real and what's not with the Patriots' offense, because they haven't faced a defensive line that's going to be a legit like player in the NFL since week two in the Steelers. But even in that Steelers game, if they don't fumble five times, they probably win the game. So I'm curious about their game against Cleveland this Sunday, not because I think Cleveland is going to win,
but the defense.
Cleveland's defensive line is going to give the Patriots a lot of problems.
Yeah, I mean, it's done that to everybody. You know, one of the things that I didn't know until before this segment, because I was going to ask you about this, you know, as great as May has been, he is second in the league in sacks taken. Do you think that's more him or the O-line, or a combination of both?
I think it's always going to be a combination of both. It depends. Sometimes Drake May, early in the season, was trying to extend plays and dropping his eyes and missing guys in the middle of the field. But I do think that offensive line is still going through a lot of growing pains. The left side of the offensive line is entirely rookies. Jared Wilson, Will Campbell, two of their first three or four picks in this year's draft are starting on the offensive line. Jared Wilson has not been good to start his career. I actually think he's more of a center than a guard, but they paid Garrett Bradbury, who's also playing center right now. So I think where they have struggled is communication on pass rush games and stunts. That's where if you see pressure with Drake May and the Patriots, it's coming from a pass rush game because they can't really communicate well right now. So I think for them, it has to come with reps. It has to come with playing together and learning what each guy is good at. So I'm curious on how they grow to defend and protect these pass rush games moving forward, so they can keep their quarterback upright.
We live in an era of recency bias. You know, what you see one week, you declare is the thing that will hold up forever, and that's a dangerous game in the NFL for sure. But with Drake May's ascendance here and Jaden having, you know, not the year he had last year for a number of reasons, he hasn't, you know, had a bad year so far. I'm just curious, are you at that point where you're ready to jump in and say what some are starting to say, and that is when we look back on the 2024 draft, it'll go May 1st and then Daniels, or not?
I think I want to see the rest of the season play out, largely because Jaden Daniels hasn't been healthy. You know, like, he has missed games due to injury, and that sucks. That's because even when Daniels did play, he was still very good. But the fact that he's not playing, it doesn't really give him a fair shot in this discussion. Just like how when we had this discussion last year, Drake May only played the back half of the season. He didn't have a lot of playing time in his rookie year. So I would say if we want to do redrafts, if we want to talk about who's going first overall, let's wait until after the end of year three, and then we can discuss it.
That's far too sensible for most people. Far too sensible. But it's the right answer. You got to wait at least. Well, quarterbacks, I think you have to wait even longer. But on drafts, you have to wait at least 3 years, I think, for the most part, to have a real feel for whether or not it was a good one or a bad one. JP Acosta from CBSSports.com joining us. All of our NFL conversation on this show brought to you by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. So I want to start with the AFC North and just go around the league with you a little bit. Pittsburgh lost that classic game last Thursday night to Cincinnati and Joe Flacco. The Bengals have a nice soft part of the schedule coming up to maybe hang in there for Burrow. People have not given up on the Ravens. When we get to the end of the season, who sits atop the AFC North?
Man. It feels like any answer you have here outside of Cleveland can be a very, like, it makes sense. But I will say the Ravens have both of their Pittsburgh games closer to the end of the season.
Right.
If they can
Same with the Bengals games, both of them.
Yes. If they can get to the end, if the Ravens can get to the end of the season healthy, and this is also dependent on this Sunday, if Lamar Jackson is healthy this Sunday, I do think the Ravens can still make a run because their offense is that good. I just worry with the Bengals. The Bengals' defense still is not a good unit, and neither is the Ravens. But I think Lamar Jackson being back earlier than what Joe Burrow might potentially be coming back to, I think that gives me more confidence in the Ravens if we're looking for somebody to upset the Steelers and take the division from them. But right now, it feels like Pittsburgh's built a pretty good lead despite having a defense that is the highest paid unit in the NFL and still not playing well. So if there's anybody that I think takes the crown from Pittsburgh this season, I think it's Baltimore. But even then, I want to see if Lamar Jackson's going to be legitimately healthy first.
Indianapolis, real or not?
I spent most of this season wondering that same question. I kind of think the offense is real. I think this offense can put up points with anybody, and it's because of how well that offensive line is playing and how well Coach Shane Steichen is drawing up plays to get the stars in the best positions possible. So that offense is very real. I do worry about the defense. I have questions about the sustainability at corner because Charvarius Ward is hurt, because they don't have a lot of depth in the secondary. But Lou Anarumo is doing his magic. He's working really well with a veteran group. I still think they could use some more pass rush pop from the edge. But we're going to find out real quick if the Colts are real as a team. They had a great win against the Chargers, but after their bye week, they play Kansas City. They play Seattle. They have Houston twice and Jacksonville twice after their bye week. Yeah. So we're going to find out if this team is real or not, but I do think the offense is legit.
Is Denver a team that can win the division, or is KC just going to be too good and they've got both games against the Broncos still?
I think Denver has the defense, too. I think their defense it can travel. I think their defense has the guys to play man coverage and the pressure to really affect Patrick Mahomes. It's all about if Bo Nix can hit the downfield throws. That has been the worst part of his game for the last couple of years, is he can't hit downfield passes. If you can't be explosive against this Chiefs defense, if you can't create explosives, then you're not going to stick in a game against Kansas City, because their offense is going to find a way to score. They're always going to find a way to put at least 25 points on the board. So if you can't match them, then I wonder if the Broncos will ever be able to pass the Chiefs in this division. They just need to get Bo Nix and this offense to generate explosive plays.
The NFC's deep. I mean, it's really loaded when you think about it. 3-5-2 teams in the NFC West. You know, Tampa's a really good team in the NFC South. I think Atlanta's very talented. The NFC North has Detroit and Green Bay, and Chicago's, quietly won 4 in a row. The NFC East has Philly. I don't know how that'll work out. But right now, as we approach the halfway mark of the season, give me your top three NFC teams in order.
Oh, man, top three NFC teams in order. I think, hesitantly, I'm going to say Seattle as number one, because I think their defense is playing really well despite not having most of their guys in the secondary yet, and Sam Darnold and Jack Smith and Jigba are playing some of the best football of their careers, respectively. Then two, I'm probably going to say Philadelphia, because they're just too talented. They're too talented to slip up. They're too talented to not go deep into the playoffs. And then the third team, I'm going to say it's tough between the Packers and the Bucks, but I'm going to say the Packers right now, because they're just healthier. They're just healthier right now. They have less holes, and they have Micah Parsons, who can fill every hole on defense. And the Bucks, I just want to see what their team looks like when they have Bucky Irving, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Luke Goedeke, and their defenders back. They haven't been a healthy team at all this season. So I want to see if they can get healthy closer to playoff time, because if they can, I do think they'll be a little higher. But right now, I'd say the Packers.
You didn't even mention Detroit. That's surprising to me.
That's the team I forgot about. Okay.
Okay. So you did forget about them.
I did forget about them, but because of how they've played, I would honestly put them ahead of Seattle at one.
Okay.
So I go Detroit, Seattle, Philadelphia.
Right. It's look, I mean, no mention of the 49ers, no mention of the Rams. This is going to be fun in the NFC. You know, last year, the 7 seed was Green Bay at 11-6. And I think we could end up with something like that this year, where, the final wild card is no less than 10 wins, more likely no less than 11 when all is said and done. JP, thanks. Really enjoyed it. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
There is a stat that we kind of mentioned from over the weekend about Washington's offense that I want to share with you. Steve Suter, I'm going to play some of his film breakdown from my podcast yesterday, and we still have NFL Power Rankings and Dan Quinn's first press conference of the week to go. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980 and TheTeam980.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dan Quinn is going to address the media for the first time, you know, this week or since Monday at 12:50. So we will start with that at the end of the show, so you'll hear the update specifically announced by the team rather than having it been reported on Jaden Daniels and maybe a few other things. I wanted to play a portion of the breakdown of the film by my guy, Steve Suter. If you're not familiar with Steve, he's been doing it for me all year long on the podcast, and we're taking, you know, each week parts of it and running it here on the radio station. Steve is one of the greatest punt returners in NCAA history and in ACC history. Calls the Maryland games with Johnny Holiday, does a great job, and he is phenomenal breaking down the film. It's funny because he's not, you know, he used to be a big Skins fan, not as much anymore. So a lot of the, you know, stuff that happens during the week, I think you'll hear the exchange when I tell him that Dorrance Armstrong's lost for the season, how shocked he was and how upset he was. But this is the first 10 minutes of the conversation with Steve, where he just tells you kind of overall his big takeaways after watching the All-22 of the game on Sunday in Dallas.
Well, I would say my first thought is, and you know, not a shocker here, but they're just beat up. Commanders are banged up on both sides of the ball, and it's wearing them down. And I just have what doing this All-22 has done for me and breaking down these games is really realizing how a 52-man roster is just not a lot of players.
53, yeah.
Sorry, 53. You get into second and third string, and it's just you just see talent drop off, and there's not enough depth that you can keep at every position and anticipate where the injury is going to go. So not like college, you got 115 guys on a roster that you can comb through. Now there's depth issues there too, but this is just kind of a glaring opening eye-opening experience for me, just to see when you got guys that go down, you know, who's coming in, who's filling in. And Washington's going through what appears like 10 defensive linemen here in the games that I've gone through. So that's just a lot of guys you got to go through.
You know what? I didn't tell you this before we started. Armstrong tore his ACL. He's done for the year.
Stop it. Oh, my gosh. Oh, right. Dude. You guys are toast.
You guys.
I'm sorry to laugh about it.
Yeah,
but
because he's been your favorite player. He and Kinlaw have been your
best player. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's been the best player on defense all season. And now, man, I didn't know that. I know I saw him get hurt. I saw him tweak the knee, but I did not know it was an ACL. That is very unfortunate. So, goodness.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll take that information into account. Yeah, that's a big blow. So, offensively, all right, I'll just go back. Offensively, banged up too, right out in the perimeter. No shocker there. You got nobody to get beat man coverage. If you heard the broadcast and as you were listening to it, they have commented how Dallas runs zone, and then now they're just going to put a bunch of man. Well, I said, well, that's not obvious, or that's obvious to me. You and I talked about it. He asked me how to defend Washington on offense. I said I'd play man coverage on them on the outside so they could show they had somebody that could beat it. And they don't, especially with Debo going out. So they came out, Dallas did, man coverage, like you heard on the broadcast, locking down the outside. Now, There were some opportunities, though, for people that did get open. Lane shockingly got open a couple of times in man coverage. Jaden missed him, didn't see the read, or threw a bad ball. So there were some opportunities, but then Dallas throughout the game went back to their zone coverage because they had the lead. They didn't have to worry about giving up a big chunk play on a man coverage where somebody gets beat or fall down. So that just seemed like a coaching strategy to me. Once they took the lead, they went back to what they were comfortable doing, playing zone the rest of the game, and Washington couldn't do anything with it because they couldn't establish the run like they used they had been doing earlier in the season. So they had to rely on passing. And Jaden, we'll get into specifics, but Jaden probably had his worst game that I've watched. And it goes from not executing on just throws. He was inaccurate most of the game. And then I think he's getting gun-shy in the pocket because of who's outside with him. And I don't think he trusts that they're going to get open. So he might look one time at one read, and then he's, all right, now I'm taking off. So hopefully this break that he gets to get healthy will also time up with Terry and Debo and Noah coming back, and he'll have all his tools, and that he doesn't have to have, he can reach out, or excuse me, like reprogram his mind that I got guys that get open, these plays are going to work, I can stay in the pocket a little longer. But currently, that's not the case. And offensively for the run game, I don't know why they couldn't get it going either. I will say this, Sam Cosmi is an upgrade from Wiley from this first game. He played pretty well, so that's encouraging moving forward. I think your line looks really good. Now, what are we, a week, I don't even know what week you're in the season here, but
yeah, you're entering week eight, line, yeah.
Yeah, you're entering week eight, and you finally got what looks like a fresh line. Now, I do want to ask you, too, because I'm not paying attention like we talked about, but I did see Wiley come in the fourth quarter. I don't know if Cosmi got hurt, or they just knew the game was out of reach.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, there was no information on Cosmi being hurt. None.
All right, good. All right, so that's good news. Then defensively, more of the same struggles. Can't cover a man coverage. These are two of the best receivers against man coverage in the game. So Lattimore is going to struggle for sure. Sanders still is going to struggle for sure. They can't cover CeeDee Lamb and Pickens. They just can't do it. But there was a lot of man coverage that was called from Washington. They tried to run their inverted cover two one time, and that's the time Debo beat them deep, streaked right down the middle of the field.
CeeDee Lamb, yeah, exactly. That was inverted cover two, right?
Yep, that was the inverted cover two. So that's why Lattimore was all the way deep. He was the second safety in that inverted cover two. But they've been putting this on tape, Washington has, all year, and I don't think – I mean, I would go back and look at the plays, but the success rate for them running this inverted cover two is very low. Teams have been completing passes on it all year, and Cowboys had 5 weeks of film to see it. I don't know if that wasn't an ad lib with CeeDee Lamb, because he sees Sanders still bail right in front of him. He knows it's an inverted cover two, and he might have just took off for that reason. They said, when we get this coverage, we're going deep right here. We're going to put these safeties in the bind, and it worked.
So
after that, they never ran it again.
I got to tell you this right now, because yesterday I said on the show, because I looked at that play over and over again, and I said, this is their inverted cover two. And then, yep, you know, you see Wagner dropping into that, you know, cover two, you know, hole area. First of all, it seemed to me like Savage was the one that was a little bit confused, but I'll come back to that in a moment. But I actually said, I don't know that CeeDee Lamb was even supposed to run that route. Somebody sent me a tweet of Brian Schottenheimer after the game, apparently told the Dallas media, yeah, that was not the play. CD improvised. So you nailed it.
I don't know any of that, but I could just see it on film that would be a clear example of why they would do that ad lib. If I saw this on tape, this would be something that Dak and I probably would have talked about too on film. Hey, man, we get this invert cover too, and it's the right formation, I'm gone because I'm beaten. So Savage isn't confused. I see what you're saying. I just pulled the play up. He's not responsible for the deep. It's cover two. You're just going to have two safeties. So it's Lattimore and it's Quan Martin.
Okay.
They're the safeties.
Yep.
So it's inverted, but it's still just basic cover two.
Right.
So Savage is coming down, working the hole. Wagner's getting a little deep, like kind of like to Mike, or excuse me, the Tampa two, but it's like it's an abbreviation of it. But 100%, when he throws his hands up here, I think he reads this two safety split. He knows I'm good. Like, I'm gone. Let's do this. Dak sees it, chucks it up. little underthrown ball. And then Lattimore's play on the ball is terrible.
He and Quan Martin did the thing they do every one of my callers called in and said they're 7-for-7 on colliding this year.
Yeah, that's true.
It's amazing.
This is a man coverage. This is a man coverage. They're not getting picked. This is a zone coverage.
Yeah.
They'll bump into each other. So
and the other part of that, too, right, is no pass rush.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to get it now, and you're not going to get it. So your best pass rusher now, to me, is Jacob Martin. Now that you're not going to have Armstrong, this game especially, he was a lot of effort from Martin. If I'm transitioning to that, he was really good for me on film, and it was mainly effort. And it's clear that he knew somebody needs to step up on the D-line. Armstrong's out now. We got injuries. Somebody's got to provide pass rush other than Armstrong. So shout out to Jacob Martin. I thought he played really well despite, you know, all the points getting put up on the board, but he was a standout for me on defense, more so than he had been in the other weeks. So good there. But to get back to it, yeah, so they stopped running this invert cover two after they got burnt here, and then it was basically man coverage the rest of the way, and they just don't have the guys that can hang with Dallas on the perimeter. And I think they're running man coverage just because they're trying to find a pass rush and they're going to bring extra guys. So even that was disappointing too. When they would bring pressure, and so they would get single blocks, right? So you bring an extra guy, then you hope your Paynes and Kinlaws don't get double teamed and everybody's got a one-on-one matchup. Well, they weren't winning any of those one-on-one matchups for the most part. So bringing pressure didn't really increase the timing of Dak Prescott at all. So the guys get to still run their routes with their typical timing, and it's hard to cover these types of receivers for that long a duration. So kind of the perfect storm now. You just don't have the bodies on defense. And I'm a broken record here. If I get man coverage, I'm looking for Lattimore and Sanders still, and every team is doing it. There's no reason not to. If they bring motion, if you're watching the game in the broadcast next week or, you know, the following week, just pay attention to motion from the offense standpoint. And if one of Washington's guys are following them, because if they are, then the QB knows it's man coverage, and then he's going to, chances are that ball is going to Sanders or Lattimore. I mean, you'd be shocked at the percentage of that. I see it every time. Once I'm watching the All-22 and I see a play go and I see man coverage and I see the motion, I'm like, oh, they know it's man coverage. Here comes the ball, Lattimore. Here comes the ball, Sanders. And they just can't step up to the challenge.
Oof.
So I don't see how you're going to fix it, honestly. Lattimore doesn't look like he has any type of burst or break towards the football. He's not confident. He's not even – if I was Lattimore at this point, I'd be gambling. I'd be jumping routes. I'd be trying to guess because my standard technique isn't working. I don't cover anybody. They're always open. So why not take a shot? I'm going to guess you're running an out here. I'm going to guess you're running a post here to try to help myself out because all I am is just getting picked on. And if I am in phase, I got my hands are just glued to the receiver. He can't keep his hands off anybody. So he's going to get called for PI even if he gets a chance to break up the pass. So you got problems in the secondary for sure. We've talked about it all year. It's not getting better. I don't mean maybe what was Will Harris's injury? Is he coming back?
He's done for the year.
He's done too, man. This is a season of injuries for Washington for sure, and I don't think he got the bodies to overcome it.
That was Steve Suter talking a lot about the defense. He talked a lot about Jaden's game, graded him, if you want to listen to that on my podcast. He also mentioned something. I gave Sanders still after the game. I said at least he had a pass breakup in the game. If you recall, there was a play where Dak is kind of flush from the pocket, throws to CeeDee Lamb, and Sanders still gets a pass breakup and, you know, raises his arms up in the air. Finally, I've got a pass breakup. And Steve said it made him laugh because he was beaten so badly off the line of scrimmage by Lamb, and Prescott, for some inexplicable reason, didn't look at him. It would have been a touchdown. It would have been a house call had he thrown it to him. There was so much separation with Lamb in motion and then lining up in the slot against Sanders still. But the play kept extending, and then Prescott ended up rolling out and throwing to Lamb late, and the ball got broken up. It's interesting when you do watch the All-22 from that perspective. On a play in which I bet you he got graded highly by some of the advanced stat groups. Suter's like, no, he got absolutely wasted at the line of scrimmage on CeeDee Lamb's inside move. Prescott on third and three was looking elsewhere to try to get just a quick chain mover and instead missed what would have been an easy house call. Interesting stuff. He's been excellent in breaking down the film. All right, when we come back, you'll hear from Quinn. We're going to do a quick NFL power rankings, and I've got a stat on Washington's offense that I think we mentioned, but I wanted to emphasize when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. Don't forget, by the way, we are sponsored by IHOP, introducing the IHOP value menu, where all your breakfast faves are just $6 each every day. Where else can you get a big, filling, sit-down breakfast for only $6? Go to your happy plates with the $6 IHOP value menu available every day at IHOP. $7 in some locations.
All right, happy Thursday, everybody. Here's what's happening. The big news of the morning. The FBI has announced a number of arrests that have been made in relation to illegal sports gambling and poker operations allegedly tied to the Italian mafia. Included among the 34 defendants arrested, Portland Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups and former Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier. The Wizards, they took on the Bucks last night in Chris Middleton's first game back in Milwaukee since being traded last season. The former Bucks forward led the Wizards in scoring with 23 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists, but the Wizards' defense largely comes up short early with 72 points allowed in the first half. The Wizards fall 133-120. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we'll push off power rankings until tomorrow, but Quinn's coming up here in a minute. I did want to hit you with something. So I think most of you knew that coming into the game on Sunday, Washington's offense led the league in dropped passes. They also lead the league in dropped pass yardage as a percent of total yards. What does that mean? It means that where the drop passes are happening in terms of the part of the field and the yardage that would have been expected, Washington's losing the most yardage with their dropped passes of any team. Well, I shouldn't say of any team. Jaden Daniels leads the league in dropped pass yardage as a percent of their total offense. So right now, if you take away the drop passes, Washington would have a top 8 pass offense in the NFL. Without it right now, they're 26th as a pass offense. Of course, it matters who the receivers are, no doubt. And it matters, a lot of things matter right now. It is not the best spot to be in where we are now with the injuries, but more importantly now with an offense that no matter who's out there is going to have to match the other team possession for possession. That's going to have to happen. Monday night's a mismatch. Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice against our defense. If they don't figure out a way to run the football and possess the football and keep Mahomes and that offense on the sideline, Monday night could get really ugly. There's always a way in the NFL, and the way Monday night is to run the football and possess the football and score when you have it, because I don't see much hope unless Mahomes just throws a couple of balls up for grabs, you know, and somehow the defense catches them. Or Jawan Taylor has six false start penalties, which is always a possibility. But, man, their offense, which is humming right now against our defense, looks like one of the mismatches of the year. Do we have Quinn?
Still waiting for the Commanders.
Okay, still
YouTube
waiting for the coach. Okay, we'll get him started when he joins and starts to talk with the local beat. Obviously, we'll get a formal announcement, I am assuming, that Jaden is out rather than just the reporting and the sourced confirmations from a lot of people, including guys like Ben Standig and John and everybody. But maybe some more on the defense, potentially, from the coach. Remember, it was Monday. The coach said, yeah, we're not going to talk about the defensive things, when he said on Sunday after the game, everything's on the table. We're going to look into everything. But he said they hadn't started that process. He would have more on that on Thursday, meaning today. So maybe we'll get more on what he's thinking defensively to try to mix things up. There are not a lot of options here. You know, and I've shared this with you guys before. It's not just one thing. And I think that's the problem, is it's not just coaching. It's not just personnel. It's not just execution. It's everything. I actually asked Suter that yesterday. He said earlier in the year with their coverage mix-ups, I would have told you coaching. But some of that's actually improved. Now it's personnel. They don't have anybody that can cover. And without Dorrance Armstrong, they're going to be hard-pressed to generate a pass rush. The good news is they can't stop the run either. So we have that that is working. Man, it got bad quickly on defense, didn't it? It was really dicey, I thought, all along to hang your hat on the results against the Giants and the Raiders. That was really dangerous because the Giants were banged up. They were starting Russell Wilson. He looked inept that day. And then the Raiders are a mess, obviously, everywhere. And, you know, I think a lot of people, including, you know, listening to Witt and Quinton, occasionally refer to those games as games in which, look, we did it. We know we can do it. Yeah, but the opponents were not very good. And when you faced Green Bay, you couldn't get off the field. When you faced Atlanta, you couldn't get off the field. When you faced the Chargers with their horrendous offensive line, there was still too much easy pitch and catch at times in that game. And now you've got, you know, no defensive ends. They did re-sign Jalen Holmes. That happened as we thought it would earlier in the week. And you've got Mahomes and Seattle and Detroit all on deck. You know, with Detroit in the hole, Seahawks on deck, Chiefs up next. They're in the box, getting ready to have a fun offensive night at Arrowhead Monday night. You know what stinks is when the schedule came out, man, this looked like, wow, Mahomes, Jaden, Monday night football. That's a game for everybody, not just us. That's a game. 13-point underdogs. All right, Quinn apparently a little bit late getting started. So we'll leave that up to the next crew, Chris's crew, to give you what Dan Quinn says when he meets with the media. Thanks to our guests. We had a busy day. Charch and Denton was on with us for a while. JP Acosta from CBS Sports and Steve Suter. Back tomorrow with smell test picks. Go around the NFL and talk about tonight's Thursday night game. Chris Russell's up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.